Please silence your cell phones and pagers during the meeting.
Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. As is our custom, we will open the meeting with the reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. This declaration of ULT is actually a document of principles. The first principle stated is that of independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. Now, there are about 28 ULT lodges situated around the world. These lodges operate autonomous of each other, but nevertheless, they are united by aim, purpose, and teaching. This Philadelphia lodge has this program, which consists of two weekly meetings, on Sunday mornings from 11 until 12 noon, and on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 until 9 o'clock. On Sunday mornings, for the month of May, the theme is Psychism and Spirituality. And the first talk for today is entitled Mediumship and Adeptship. And next Sunday, the title of the forum talk is True Clairvoyance. Now, these Sunday morning meetings always allow time for a question and discussion after the presentations. On Wednesday evenings at 7:45 to 9 o'clock, there is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy by William P. Judge. The class will begin studying chapter 16 this coming Wednesday, and this will be looked at from the standpoint of laws of polarity and cohesion. Now, each Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 7:30, the reference library is open for research and study. It carries a straight line of theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines, all comprising the original writings of the founders of the theosophical movement. Also, there is a reference available in connection with the evening's class. If you're interested in purchasing any of the literature, this may be accomplished at the book table just outside of the meeting room. All activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, of service, and money. And all are most welcome to participate. The reading for today has been selected from The Voice of the Silence by Madam H.B. Blavatsky. Three halls, O weary pilgrim, lead to the end of toils. Three halls, O conqueror of marrow, will bring thee through three states into the fourth, and thence into the seven worlds, the worlds of rest eternal. If thou wouldst learn their names, then hearken and remember. The name of the first hall is ignorance, avidya. It is the hall in which thou sawest the light, in which thou livest and shalt die. The name of hall the second is the hall of learning. In it thy soul will find the blossoms of life, and under every flower a serpent coiled. The name of the third hall is wisdom, beyond which stretch the shoreless waters of Akshara, the indestructible font of omniscience. If thou wouldst cross the first hall safely, let not thy mind mistake the fires of lust that burn therein for the sunlight of life. If thou wouldst cross the second safely, stop not the fragrance of its stupefying blossoms to inhale. If freed thou wouldst be from the karmic chains, seek not for Dagaru in those Mayavic regions. The wise ones tarry not in pleasure grounds of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. Seek for him who is to give thee birth in the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfailing glory. The subject of the talk of this morning is mediumship versus adeptship.
Friends, this subject of mediumship versus adeptship is an immense one, and one that, in all justice, we could not even begin to scratch the surface in a series of lectures. And yet, if we have an acquaintance with the fundamental teachings of the philosophy of theosophy, that will serve us to have a good understanding of the difference between mediumship and adeptship. Now, the dictionary is generally a good place to begin. However, if we just rely on those sources, our understanding will be incomplete and misleading, and in fact will completely fail to miss the understanding of the implications and the applications of these ideas in our everyday life. So if we go to the dictionary and we look up the term medium or mediumship, we either find a very general term, such as one who is under the control or influence of another being who manifests and expresses the will and intent of another. Or we may find a more specific definition, which is kind of misleading in its own way, in which we are told that a medium or mediumship is the capacity or functioning as a channel of communication between this world and the world of spirits. Now, if we go to the dictionary and we look up the word adept or an adept, of course, there we find a very general approach. An adept is someone who's very skilled and knowledgeable in a specific area, an expert, in fact. The point that Theosophy wants to make is that these two conditions, mediumship and adeptship are abnormal, exceptional, and in some cases premature developments of all the capacities and possibilities that every human being has within their nature. And so our title this morning, Mediumship versus Adeptship, is meant to convey the idea that we have within us the possibilities of both. And we can choose, and in fact choose with every moment of our waking lives, which of those paths we're going to pursue. So if we want to understand that we all have the potential for mediumship, just consider that every human being is in some way, can be under the influence emotionally and therefore in their action of another human being. What they want to do, what they want us to do, what they say. And to that extent, every man, woman, and child is a medium. And we can also acknowledge that many, if not most, human beings have their weaknesses and vulnerabilities, and they can be manipulated sometimes unawares. On the other hand, all the possibilities of power, of knowledge, of an adept lie in germ in possibility within every human being. An adept, it is said, is made from their own will and effort. They're not born under any special privilege. They're not an accident of nature. They're not privileged through special grace. But each has made the effort over a long course of training and through many lives to reach that condition. So the adept then is a living human being, the same in kind as any other human being, but different in degree. So we have the same potential, but it is important to understand the distinction right from the beginning. So when we use the term mediumship, we are referring to the case of an individual who is abnormally under the influence and control of some other being, to the point where they have lost control or they've given up control. This can be voluntary, involuntary. They may be conscious or unconscious of the fact. They may not even be aware that they are a medium, or they might be, or they may not even be aware of the source of the influence that comes on them, but they are nevertheless under the influence. So the hallmark of mediumship is one, loss of self-control to an abnormal degree, and ignorance of the power that is being manifested in them and the source of that influence. On the other hand, the hallmark of adeptship is knowledge. Knowledge of the unseen, hidden laws of and forces of man and nature, and we've touched on some of those this season. It is power over those forces. It is complete subjugation and power over one's lower nature. And it is the power to investigate firsthand through their developed capacities, mental, psychic, and spiritual, into the very heart of nature and to have firsthand knowledge and control of that. So we say the hallmark of the adept is knowledge and power. So they are the two basic ideas that give us the distinction. So we want to back up then and now look at these two again, but in the light, as we mentioned at the beginning, of the fundamental principles or teachings of the philosophy of theosophy. So let's begin with what we call the first fundamental proposition, that which relates to deity. And when people think of deity, they usually think of the ultimate source and origin of all things. And unlike the very prevalent and common notion that deity is a supreme being external to us, Theosophy puts forth the idea for our consideration that deity is the boundless, eternal, ever-present reality, the one absolute source of all that ever is, was, and will be. And so, in order to wrap our minds, our finite minds, around such an infinite conception, we are offered the symbol of space, because we can understand that space is everywhere and everything. We can't affect space by things that manifest it. And as no matter how far we imagine and stretch our minds to encompass space, we know that there is more space beyond that. And space is not only out there, it's within, it's in all things. And so deity, as the ultimate source, cannot be less than space. So we have this absolute oneness, we'll call it the spiritual source of life. And because of that, everything has come forth and is interconnected, and we say it's the basis, the spiritual basis of universal brotherhood. So if a spark or an aspect of this is in every human being has within their spiritual center the capacity, the power that belongs to that infinite source. And to the extent that they can manifest that power, that omnipotence, that omniscience, determines the degree of an adeptship. And we might say that the highest expression possible in this particular period of evolution of all that divine potential is called a Mahatma, or a great soul. All human beings are essentially souls in their inner nature, in their real nature, the difference being one of degree of development and expression through evolution. So from this one, within one, principle, reality, periodically we have coming forth the manifested universe of worlds and beings and solar systems and planets and stars. And Theosophy teaches us that there is an intelligence there, that there's, we might say, almost a plan in nature, that everything comes forth in a sevenfold manifestation, seven possibilities of expression from the highest to the lowest. And so everything in nature has a sevenfold expression. The very substance that makes up all the forms of being is sevenfold in its nature. And the very way in which we can perceive and be conscious in our experience is sevenfold, depending on which plane and degree of substance we're functioning on. And we can sort of sense that. We know that our consciousness during the waking state is different through our physical brain and body than that degree of consciousness and awareness we have when the body is asleep and we're functioning in the dream state. So we can expand that conception. So if there is a differentiation of degree of substance from the highest to the lowest, from the most ethereal to the most gross, and we're familiar with, we exist on the most gross plane of matter. But that plane of substance, just beyond, just a little bit more ethereal, starry, electrical, magnetic in nature, is given a special name to designate it in the philosophy. It's called either the astral light or the astral substance. And being electrical and magnetic in nature, it can absorb and reflect and give back the impressions of our thoughts, our feelings, whatever has happened on this physical plane. It's sort of the mirror, the recording aspect of nature. Well, we all have contact with that. We all have part of our nature that is of that substance. But the medium in their constitution, by as the result of previous practices, have more of that astral substance, that astral light in that in their nature. And that converts, gives them a certain quality, but it also presents a certain risk. And the quality it gives them is because they have more of that nature, they are more psychic, naturally. Their minds are more open and sensitive to those impressions. We all are, but they are more so. And also, being that that astral light or substance reflects back and distorts the lowest aspects of our nature, they may be psychic, but the impressions they receive in general are also distorted, negative, and so forth. Now, it is possible for a very pure medium, pure personally in their motive, somewhat trained in their will, to reach up and receive impressions from those higher degrees in substance. But generally, as most of us, they are not that pure of nature, nor do they have that strongly developed will. And so for most, they are only receiving impressions from that astral, and what they are communicating with is not the spirits of the dead, the souls of those who have lived on earth, but rather what we say, the astral shells, the clothing that has been left behind by the soul that has gone into its higher after death state. So that's what the medium or the channeler is in contact with. Now, we said that there is a sevenfold aspect of nature, but the human being also has a sevenfold nature. And we speak of the human being has three higher aspects and four lower, the four being the vehicles that the real man, the immortal soul, uses life after life. And in each life, it's a different combination of principles. So we say there's the real eternal pilgrim soul made of spirit, spiritual soul, and mind, a unity. And then there are the instruments they use, the passions and desires, the previously mentioned astral body, the life principle, and of course the physical. The point of this is that the various phenomena, psychic and mediumistic, of the medium are the result of the ability of the astral body to see in and perceive and be influenced by that those impressions in the astral light, because it's of the same nature. And so that astral body is the real seat of our senses, physical and otherwise. And so what is reported and very often manifested is the result of that connection. The adept, on the other hand, has that mind principle, but has united it more or less permanently with its spirit and spiritual soul, and therefore is in contact with its highest nature, its universal wisdom and intelligence, and can use that to control, guide, and manifest not only all the forces of nature, but also the lower aspect of the adept's nature is under control. And once again, we want to point out that if there is one source, one infinite source, that is the source of all the different powers and degrees of forces in the universe, if the human being has learned to identify and unite oneself with that in knowledge, then they are master or an adept of those forces and capacities. But that possibility, as we said, is not unique, but is the ideal and fact of the possibility of human perfection. Of course, that's relative to any specific degree of evolution, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. So we see here that this first fundamental gives us an understanding of the difference between mediumship and adeptship. So from there, we want to move into what we call the second fundamental proposition, which is that of law, this being a universe of law. And in fact, there's what we call the cyclic law and the law of karma, but they are both part of the same universal process and really are indistinguishable in terms of their manifestation. Cycles referring primarily to the periodicity, the recurrence of events, of experiences, of beings in a cyclical, periodical way, and karma being that law of cause and effect, action and reaction. Very often that which comes back to us periodically is the lawful karmic return of impressions we've set up in the past. And this law is universal. It affects all beings. It affects the highest and the lowest. There is no degree of intelligence that is outside its influence, from the smallest to the most grandest we can conceive. And so the medium and the adept alike are under its sway. The adept, however, having learned about that law and its expressions, is a conscious and willing servant of that law, knows how and when to act in accordance with it. The medium, on the other hand, their very condition is the result of the expression of causes they've set up, usually in a previous life. Because it is very difficult for full mediumship to bloom in any one life as a result of the expression in an effort in that one life. We may develop a tendency towards it, a certain psychic inclination, but the real expression of mediumship requires effort over an extended period of time. And so very often individuals have this natural capacity to a greater or lesser degree. And so what determines whether the exercise of mediumship is, quote, good or bad, the karmic effect of it, is the motive, just like everything else, and it's the knowledge with which one is used, and it's the use to which it's put, the knowledge, the motive, and the use to which it's put. But if you don't have knowledge, and if the motive is impure, the karmic consequences, because of the forces generated, can be that much more damaging or destructive. So, for that reason, Theosophy warns us, and we've gone over this in previous classes, to avoid the development of mediumship. And if one has it, as of by now, to some degree, to discipline oneself to use it with the most purest of motives and uses that they can conceive of, not to use it for personal advantage or dominion over others or to get